Mr. Pittman, Reel 8. We're talking, going through your various postings after the war.
Can I just mention one thing? In November 56, I was promoted to Commission Warrant Officer, which meant I NAWAR 6 Stripes.
Could you explain what that means?
Yeah, I NAWAR 6 Stripes, same as a sub-lieutenant.
And what difference did it make?
Oh, only difference in pay and pension. And in January 1956, they introduced this special duties branch. And if you had a 6 stripes, you were automatically given 2 stripes. And if you had a thin stripe, you were given a 6 stripe. We dipped out on that, actually, because we no longer had our own mess. We were in the wardroom.
And what differences did it make to you? I mean, it makes a hell of a difference, I suppose, with a commission, but as you say, a new wardrobe. Well, how did you fit in with the other officers? You'd come up with a very different method from most of them.
Yeah, well, I was fitting in quite well. I don't think I did, anyway.
How did you find the warrant officers' mess differed from the wardroom?
Well, you only had your own members there, and it wasn't quite so posh as the wardroom, you know. Didn't have so many dinners, really.
Well, how did you fit in? What did you think of wardroom life?
Very good, but it amuses me when people go on about drink now. I mean, as a wardroom officer, you were allowed to drink 9/3 of spirits a day. Now, a third of gin was 2D old money. And you could drink, the volume didn't exceed £5 a month. You can drink a lot of gin at 240p a pound in Ghana. Or 240d, actually. And you could drink as much beer and wine as you wanted. And parties, it was put on the mess share, it wasn't put on your wine bill at all. So I think a lot of us actually were raving alcoholics. And the other thing, of course, was that whereas warrant officers, we didn't do any duties, once we became wardroom officers, we had to stand officer of the watch and whatnot.
Well, you hadn't much training as officer.
It was only on the quarterdeck and that sort of thing. Not on the bridge, no. On the quarterdeck in harbour.
What would you do as officer of the watch quarterdeck?
Well, make sure that the ship was run at carry 8 range, make sure everything was all right, and check liberty men when they came back aboard. I was always surprised how you would see a chap ridding along the jetty, but when he got to that... got to the ship gangway, come up as straight as a die, saluted the quarterdeck.
Now, which ship were you actually on, or is this in the reserve fleet this was happening?
It's in the reserve fleet.
Were you actually on any particular ship, or would you just move about?
Mm?
Were you on any particular ship when you were with the reserve fleet?
No.
So what's the next thing that happened then?
Well then, in March 1957... I was sent out to the Mediterranean to join the staff of Flag Officer Second in Command, who was the Vice Admiral, as Assistant Staff Ordnance Engineer Officer.
What was that job like? Were you based ashore?
No. Oh, sorry, yes. Based at Manuel Island.
At where?
Manuel Island. M-A-N-O-E-L, Manuel Island, Malta.
And what was the job like?
Well, it was going around the fleet and checking that everything was going all right. And there was one ship flooded the transmitting station, and the ordnance engineer was a young generalist officer. Who'd had no practical experience, so I was asked to go over and have a look, and I stripped the whole thing down, cleaned it up, and put it all back together again. Which he wasn't capable of doing. But I had the wife and family out there then. And then, let's have a look.
So, June 58?
Yeah, June, that was then. June 58, they transferred us all over to the CNC staff, called it the Central Technical Staff.
At Malta still? At Malta still.
At Malta still, yeah. And
Still, you were still assistant staff ordnance officer.
Yeah. Well, what happened was it meant then that the fleet ordnance engineer now had two assistants. He had his own and he had me. So he said, one of you had better do surface weapons and another of you had better do underwater weapons. I said, well, I've never had a course on underwater weapons, so I'll do underwater weapons.
So where were you trained on that?
Nowhere. I picked gloves as I went along. I was quite surprised to see what a difference it was. I mean, the underwater problem is the surface, the air problem inverted, and yet they used all different terms. Instead of talking about amorph, they talked about deflection and whatnot. And I tried to get the term standardised. And where we used a 2-inch magslip transmitter, they used an 1.5-inch, and there seemed to be nothing common between the two. AUWE at Portland and ASWE on the hill didn't seem to have know one another, you know. I was a bit embarrassed there once because when the Daring class came out, the destroyers, Captain Stewart, who was the fleet engineer, asked me to go and have a look at the torpedo mountings because they're rooting their way through the deck, torpedo tubes. So I went and had a look, and when I came back, he said, what did you think? I said, well, sir, who was the bloody fool that put Drelamin torpedo tubes onto a steel deck with an insulating membrane between? He said, well, I'll tell you who that was. I said, who? He said, me. He said, we didn't know about it in those days, but he never fought against me.
Anything else happened while you were there? Or any other things you were...
Well, eventually they decided that instead of serving with the fleet ordnance engineer, I'd work with the actual staff torpedo officer. So I joined Ronnie Payson, who was the commander in charge of torpedo and submarines. And he said, what do you know about torpedo analysis? And I said, don't know anything. He said, well, there's your chance to learn them. There's 12 there waiting to be done. Do them.
So what was torpedo analysis?
Well, that was after a practice. They gave you the plot and what had happened. You had to work out if they'd made any mistakes or what went wrong. And he said, by the way, you do know as... I'm going to call you assistant fleet underwater weapon officer, he said, or torpedo officer. He said, and that means you're assistant submarine officer as well. So I had quite a happy time there, you know. I was able to make a few suggestions about submarines and that sort of thing.
And what sort of thing?
Well, there was the bow door and the stern tube cap, the only way you knew, you shouldn't open this rear door until the front door was shut. Otherwise you let the water in. And the only way you knew if the front was shut was by a signal. Well, I suggested an interlock, same as used on the 15-inch turrets, so that you couldn't open one without the other one. It was shut. I say there just didn't seem to be any combination between the two, underwater and surface weapons. Instead of being sent back to excellent, I was sent to Vernon, now being a torpedo specialist. And there I served as weapons maintenance officer.
That must be pretty unusual, change in specialisation.
Yeah, it was. And I used to look after all the minesweepers that attached to Vernon, all the ships attached to Vernon.
So, what duties did you have? Could you describe what you were doing as weapons maintenance officer?
Well, I was responsible for maintaining all the instructional equipment in Vernon. all the equipment on the minesweepers and any ships working out of Berlin. I had a staff of ordnance artificers. And it was quite a poor job. I mean, there was quite a lot of instructional equipment and whatnot there. It's quite a poor job.
And you were up to it? You'd
yeah, did it.
Did you see torpedoes as an anti-submarine thing, as a more go-ahead department of the Navy than guns by that time?
Well, they had an acoustic minesweep, the acoustic Hammer Mark IV, which had a life of about 40 hours and couldn't be used above 6 seas, right? Because the spring broke. Well, I had one sectioned, and I put it had a spring inside, a coil spring behind the head, and a leaf spring on the front. And it was based on the Kengo hammer, which I smashed up concrete with. And I had it photographed with a semi camera, and then run it in slow motion. And what was happening was that the head was travelling in an arc. So in actual fact, only the centre two coils of the spring were working. And this developed stress fatigue and broke. So I modified it and I run the head on slipper blocks. And took the leaf spring off. Slipper blocks are little bearings which run in straight lines. And so the coil spring, the whole thing operated in a straight line like this. And we run one for 2,000 hours where a spring broke in. And they found they could even sweep in a force 10C. But they found out they daren't operate it alongside of a concrete jetty. Because the concrete disintegrated. All by the bloke from AUWE. At Portland, that it wasn't up to me to design things. That was the job of the Royal Naval Scientific Service.
How did you? That's pretty unapproved. Hmm? That's fairly rude of him.
Oh, no.
Had you had any promotion by this time? Were you still a lieutenant?
No, I was still a lieutenant. Yeah.
And what's your next?
Next one is believed an engineer. A lieutenant commander, engineer. That was a generalist weapons engineer on the TAS Equipment Agency. This was an agency that operated in Vernon, and it consisted of myself as a mechanical engineer, an electrical officer and an executive officer. We worked under command of trials, and we had to examine post designs of weapons and suggest maintenance modifications and whatnot.
And you were doing this for how long?
Well, that was until...
Till August 63?
Yeah. It's like August 63.
Anything in particular you came up with?
Well, several things, yes, where I tried to stabilise the difference between surface weapons. One thing they brought out an order saying that it was found that synthetic rubber steels caused corrosion to steel. So they were being replaced by natural leather seals. Well, I happen to remember that about 20 years before, they'd said that they'd found that that natural leather seals caused corrosion and was being replaced by synthetic rubber seals. This was in the surface weapons. So I went to Whale Island, where I know they had a museum library of every fleet order that had ever been issued, and I got this order photocopied, and I got the new one photocopied and put them side by side and forwarded it for their lordship's guidance. And I pointed out that the surface weapons and they've gone over to a different joint altogether, and I assumed in 20 years The underwater weapons will do the same thing. That again made me very unpopular, I usually be.
Anything else you're up to?
Oh yeah, another thing. When they brought out the Toad Asdic decoy.
The what?
Toad Asdic decoy. I had to go through the list, check everything. And one thing I couldn't make out was it said a two and a half inch worm drive clip. So I thought, where the hell is a 2.5 inch worm drive here then? I couldn't find it. And so I said to the stores officer over a drink one day, about this worm drive. He said, you know what a worm drive clip is, don't you? I said, no, it's a Jubilee clip. It's the manual store's name for a Jubilee clip. So I got in my motor and headed off down to AUWE to see the designer of this. And I said, where did you put this clip then? He said, well, you drop the transducer inside the barrel and you could screw this cat nut on top. And then you put this Jubilee clip over the top of the cat nut and screw up tight. I said, well, you do realise that that's a very fine thread. And if you keep collapsing it and releasing it, it's going to spring, and you'll eventually cross-thread the thing. Oh, he said, it's all right for you. He said, you're a very experienced engineer. I said, well, if you're not, you shouldn't be designing these things, should you? So, I wasn't very popular with those, exactly.
Anything else?
No, not that I remember.
So next?
1963, I was sent out to the Med again. Oh, sorry, no, I beg your pardon, not Med. What am I talking about? I was made Assistant Warship Weapons Overseer, Southern Area.
Now, what did that involve? That sounds like a big job.
Yeah, my office was at Southampton, but I was responsible for the manufacture. I had a staff of civil servants. I was responsible under a captain who was the actual overseer in London for the maintenance, the manufacture to Admiralty specifications of all weapon and radio equipment in a line south of the Wash, and any ships refitting in foreign any foreign ships refitting in private dockyards, of which they used to pay, I think it was 2% of the contract price to the Admiralty for our services. That was a very interesting job, going all around southern England.
Do you remember any particular things you were dealing with?
I oversaw the building of the Arethusa at J.S. White's Cares. refitting of two Egyptian destroyers at Thornycroft, Southampton. And also ran the different factories, the manufacturer of torpedo tubes and mine sweeps.
Were things generally up to specifications?
Yes, yes. Yeah. If not, we soon picked them up, you know. But I went to one factory where they were manufacturing acoustic minesweeps Mark IV. And the owner of the factory started to explain to me all how it worked. And one of my inspectors that was with me, he burst out laughing. He said, I said, what are you laughing at? He said, Lieutenant Commander Pittman designed it.
And you had designed it.
Yeah, I designed that one, yeah. So,
Now you've been promoted to Lieutenant Commander. Had this been happening gradually? You were Lieutenant last time we heard.
Well, yeah, I joined as Lieutenant, but then I got promoted to Lieutenant Commander. That would have been, that must have been in August. That must have been November 62.
And you enjoyed the work?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, then I took over then completely from the captain in London, and I took over as the warship whip when I was here, so when I
Does that make any difference?
No, not really, no. Again, it was visiting lots of firms, lots of entertainment, you know, and this sort of thing. I used to get them. They couldn't give me any presents for Christmas because that would have been bribery and corruption, but they used to send my wife a crate of whiskey at Christmas and whatnot. Firms like Bosper's and those sort of people, you know.
Did that affect your judgment or did you just ignore it?
No, no. I didn't mind. I was always told my inspectors I didn't mind them having a drink, but not to accept anything else. Because then I found two of them and accepted a hotel for the weekend up north and a golfing weekend. And I read the Riot Act on over that, because that could be bribery and corruption. Well, then what happened was in, let's see, when did I retire? 1967, the director of programs tried to get me promoted to full commander, being as I was doing a captain's job. But unfortunately, I was too old by then. The age limit was 47, and he couldn't. So he said, well, he was due to retire next year at the age of 50. He said, if you would like to sign on for another 5 years, you can keep on as the warship with an overseer of Southern Area for the next 5 years. So I said, no, I'd want another 5 years. Thank you.
Why was that?
Well, I worked out that if I lived to 80 years, right, I would have been working for 5 years on half pay, because I would have got half my basic payer's pension anyway. And in 15 years, I couldn't make it up. I didn't know at 83 I was still going to be swanning around, and inflation would have gone bloody sky high.
So you retired as warship weapons overseer in 1968?
Well, no, I'll tell you. So what happened then was that they sent a generalist commander in to relieve me, and I went to HMS Collingwood then.
In 1967 then?
Yes, wasn't it?
Collingwood was 67.
Yeah.
And what was your job there?
To set up a mechanical weapons instructional unit.
And what was your job title?
I was then Group Officer Ordnance.
And how did you go about this?
Well, we had a building, we had no electricity in. So one night myself and a couple of chiefs went over to an adjoining building that had electricity, and we wired ourselves in. I went to Exeter and cashed a lot of equipment.
Oh, I should have asked where Collingwood is. It's Port.
That's just outside Fareham, isn't it? It was the electrical school then. But the electrical branch took over the ordnance branch. I forgot to tell you, as an ordnance officer, I wore dark blue under my ring. And as when we were taken over by the engineers, and I wore purple. And then we were taken over by the electrical department, but they'd done away with colours by then.
So what were you doing? You're establishing this training program.
Yeah.
How did you go about that?
Well, I made several films and cached equipment, and within 6 months we had it running, fully running. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, let's say what else. But it was all done in my final years of service, and the project was successful, largely due to this officer's personal effort.
So you got this training program up and running. And what sort of syllabus did it have?
Well, we only had projectors, you know, which we showed in the lecture room.
But what were you training them in?
Ordnance engineering. Well, that time it was combined with electrical engineering.
And what about your retirement then?
Well, when I came to retire, I was offered two jobs. Sorry. Go to Persia and set up a weapons engineering branch in the Iranian Navy. And my surprise, the other one was to join the Royal Naval Scientific Service as senior experimental officer. I didn't join Guam. I took a pub instead.
You took a pub?
Yeah.
What made you do that?
Well, the wife had been brought up in the pub trade, and pubs had been in my family. And I thought, we took the son in at Calbourne and the other one. But I only spent a year there because the brewer got more and more greedy. For instance, all the lads of the village used to go down to Newport, 5 miles away, in the evenings, because there was nothing to entertain them. So I put in gaming machines and a jukebox. And eventually the chap came along from the brewery and said, how do you want to make these gaming machines and jukebox? I said, well, the owner gets 50% and I get 50%. They said, oh, not anymore, you don't. They said, you get 33 1/3%, we get 33 1/3%, and the owner gets 33 1/3%. And then I put in catering.
And what did you do after you'd been a pub landlord?
Well, I gave it up after a year. Then we moved from the Isle of Wight to, we had a little bungalow down at Gurnard. We lived there for a bit. And then we moved to...
didn't work anymore, though? You'd finished?
No, I did. Then we moved to Lancing in Sussex. And at Lancing, I had an antique shop. I enjoyed the antique trade very much. And also while there, I taught part-time at the West Sussex College of Design.
So you kept busy?
Yeah. And then I took on as manager of the Connaught Theatre. We moved from Lancing then back to Worthing. We lived there for some time. Then we moved to Scotland, where we had a modernised 16th century lodge.
But you weren't working there?
Yeah, we had a news agency in Lanark.
So you had a variety of careers?
Yeah. We had a news agency in Lanark, on the station.
And then what?
Well, then eventually we found it got very lonely in the winter, and we moved back to... Then down to Gosport. And then from Gosport, we moved back to the Isle of Wight, where we had two homes over there. And from there, we moved back to Gosport.
Backwards and forwards. Thank you very much.